Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jackie and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Boston group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. If you are looking for a home group, we would love to have you. Our business meetings are on the third Thursday of the month at 6 o'clock on Zoom. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information as well as recordings of our meetings. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote will always be from our AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we will automatically split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussion will end at 12:53, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Liz to read the 12 steps.
Thanks, Jackie. Liz, alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to all, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Liz. Appreciate that. Today, we're going to hear a talk on steps 8 and 9. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Please give a warm welcome to Jimmy A. from Spring Lake Heights, New Jersey. Thank you, Jimmy.
There we go. All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Jimmy. I am an alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober. And it's customary where I come from to let you know that I got a home group. It's called the Design for Living Group in Neptune, New Jersey, on the Jersey Shore. There you go, Cynthia. And I have a sponsor. I have a service sponsor. And most importantly, well, I sponsor a lot of men. And most importantly, I've been sober since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was on March 28, 1987. So grateful for this way of life, grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, and grateful to be here today. Thank you to the group. Thank you to Arisa. I've spoken here a few times. And I wasn't sure if I did 8-9, but Arisa, I did do 8-9 at one point. But it's always good to talk about amends anyway. As a wise man once said to me, does not finishing your amends have anything to do with your drinking? And that's a question that I hope you could just let it resonate in your mind today. Does not finishing my amends have anything to do with me drinking again? I'm a real big believer, and this is from my own experience, that Alcoholics Anonymous has two goals. And the first goal is the obvious one, not to pick up the first drink. But the second goal is the one I think we all want to attain, and that's to step into the sunlight of the spirit. And when I talk of the sunlight of the spirit, I'm talking about a place where we could all get if we do all our steps. And you know, it's a place where, you know, we could form a true relationship with God, a true relationship with each other. It's a place where I believe all the promises that are scattered throughout our literature come true. I believe it's a place where the bondage of self gets removed. And I also think this is where, you know, we get to that place of neutrality, safe and protected from alcohol. You know, whenever I say that line, I always think of John Travolta. You might say, John Travolta, what do you say that for? Well, for you old people, you remember there was the after-school movie that used to be on, and there was a movie with John Travolta called The Boy in the Bubble. And in that story, he had, you know, some kind of disease, and he was living in a bubble. And, you know, I think that that's like us here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that we can live in this bubble. And the bubble is the God bubble, where nothing from the outside is going to come and affect us, that we could stay safe and protected in that place of neutrality. And to deal with life on God's terms rather than Jimmy's terms. So this place of the sunlight of the spirit, you know, I can't think of anything more important that blocks us off from that freedom than unresolved amends or conflicts with others. And, you know, we're coming out of that 6th and 7th step. Andrew did a great job yesterday listening to him, you know. We'll be working on these steps for the rest of our lives. Opportunities will continue to pop up for us to change throughout the rest of our life as we practice those steps. You know, step seven asks us something very specific, or we're asking God for something very specific, and that's not to be happy or not to be rich or anything like that. It's really to be useful, you know, and I can't be useful if I'm still in conflict with others. So this whole idea of going out and cleaning up my past is paramount, to say the least. It's vital, you know, life-threatening if I don't, and life-giving if I do, you know. But the real power is in the willingness to go out and make those amends. And one thing I can't do for any of my sponsees, and they can't do for me, is make somebody willing. Hopefully circumstances make me willing. So step 8 says, made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, when I went through the steps the first time, and really it's every time I've gone through the steps, and when I take men through the steps, you know, when it comes to this list is formed when I'm listening to your inventory, just like my sponsor handed me my first original list after he listened to me, you know, share my 5th step with him. And when we got to this list, you know, We went over this list. You know, is there amends due? Is there no amends due? You know, we really looked at it, you know. One of the things when he handed me this list, which was very important, was that he reminded me that we agreed at the beginning that we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. Now, that's written in the 8th step in the big book, and I know that he said it for a specific reason, and maybe it might be your reason too. Because many of us, when we get that list the first time, especially when we go through this process, you know, what that list really generates is a lot of fear, right? Now, if I'm afraid to make amends, as it's been pointed out, if I'm afraid to make amends, that fear should have been showing up on my fourth step inventory, right? Afraid to make amends. Why? You know, how does self-reliance family? You know, what's the better way? You know, so I should have had a conversation with my sponsor about this stuff if I was afraid to make amends. So we break up the list. Now, you know, there's a few different ways to break up this list, you know, and this is just, you know, not written anywhere. It's kind of my opinion. I've seen it before. You know, I know a lot of you guys get that list from your sponsor. You put it on index cards. You get the highlighters out like some of you girls have today. You know, you put butterflies and rainbows on top of that index card. Am I willing to do that? Am I not willing to do that? You know, that's one way of doing it, you know. Another way of doing it, which I've done, is take a legal pad and just start from the, you know, all the names, start from the top, like a grocery list, start from the top and go to the bottom. But the way I really like to do it, especially when I'm taking someone through the first time, it's written in the ninth step in the first page on the 12 and 12 on step nine, where it breaks this list up into four categories. The first category is those who ought to be dealt with just as soon as we become reasonably confident that we can maintain our sobriety. We call this the now list. These are the lists which, you know, I like to call softballs. They're not always softballs, but these are people that I know I can go to from my list, and I know that I'm not going to get loaded because of this, right? Now, it might get uncomfortable in that amends process. It might be painful, but I'm not going to drink over it, right? The second category, those to whom we could only make partial restitution, less complete disclosures do them or others more harm than good. We call this the later list, you know, and this is a list of what I can go to people. I am not going to drop some bombs on them to create more harms in their life. I have a very specific amends that I know I need to make. I'm going to ask them, is there anything else? But I'm not going to, you know, if I had an extramarital affair with the guy's wife, I'm not going to drop that on his lap and say, this is what I've done, right? The third category is cases where action ought to be deferred. And this is the maybe list. And this is a list that, you know, sometimes I'm just not sure what to do here. And sometimes I just got to let a little time or a little separation before I deal with this. You know, that doesn't say I'm not doing it. It just means, you know, maybe right now at this time in my sobriety, I'm just not ready to do this. And then that last category, others in which by the very nature of the situation, we shall never be able to make direct personal contact at all. We call this the never list. And this list usually is people that have maybe passed away. We could always write a letter. The other thing too is, you know, in this day and age, I remember when I first went through these things, we didn't have social media. So you had to play really junior detective to find people. You know, you had to make phone calls. You know, you had to go to any length to find people and to clean up your past. But I think in today's world with, you know, all the social media sites, I think it's pretty easy to, you know, find this list, find these people, I should say. You know, and so I've done this a lot of different ways, but I can tell you one thing, what my sponsor was very clear on any kind of list that you're right. The question is, can I afford not to make amends? Because if I'm not willing to make amends, guess what? I'll have trouble in relationships. And if I have trouble in relationships, I'm going to be right back in my head again. And I'll be blocked from God. And, you know, a guy like me doesn't survive very long without God and without Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. And, you know, a guy like me will drink again. You know, we have three purposes in Alcoholics Anonymous. Primary purpose, singleness of purpose, and real purpose. And real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to others and to serve them. So when I'm getting this list, I'm given some mechanics to how out to go out and make these amends. You know, the first thing is really important is that I make an appointment with the person that I'm making amends to, right? I just don't show up at your front door after 20 years. You know, last time you saw me, I was choking you, and now I'm on your front door again. I mean, God forbid, you know, right? So I need to make an appointment. And the appointment looks like this, you know, hi, Joe, this is Jimmy. Yeah, you know, I've been going over my life for the last couple of weeks, and I see that I've created a lot of harm in your life, and I just want to sit down and talk to you about some things that have, you know, really come to light. And I'd like to meet you in a neutral place. It's not at your home, obviously, in a neutral place like a diner or a coffee shop or in a park where there's other people where you feel safe. You know, I want to make sure that the person I'm going to see knows that there's no motives, there's no thing coming at him, and that he can be in a place of safety, you know. When I go and make an amends, I get dressed the way I look right now. I don't show up in a tank top and a hat on. As my old sponsor used to say, I don't show up like I just committed a felony, right? I look the part of recovery. I look the part of a sober man. So I get dressed to go to that appointment, right? And then we get the mechanics. You know, I've always been told that, you know, when you have that list, one amends a day is the focus on that list. What? You mean make one amends a day? Well, if you want to get done with that list, the focus will be one amends a day. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to get an amends done every day. But the idea here is that, you know, I don't want this thing to just go on and on and on to the point of no return. You know, I really want to attack this list. I really want to clean up this past. And I really want to do get these things over with. Now, the intention of the amends is not to feel better or not to get relief. Though that does happen, there's one intention in making amends. And that's for freedom. Freedom from the bondage of this stuff, right? I want to clean it up to the best of my ability. Our literature really gives us a bunch of scenarios of different types of amends. But the bottom line is, you know, whether you accept my amends, whether you slam the door on me, or whether you tell me to get out of your office, the idea is the willingness to go and try to clean up the past. You know, so that idea of freedom, that idea of, you know, no matter what, I've made the approach, I did my best. You know, I'm trying to take away the wedges that stand between me and God and me and you. And this is what goes on. So when I get to that guy's house, you know, there's a couple of ways that I do this. You know, I let Joe know, you know, the amends that I'm very clear on, you know. Well, the first thing I do is I tell him why I'm there, to take doubt out of his mind. Like, you haven't seen me in 10 years. Why are we sitting in a coffee shop? And I let him know why I'm there, right? I tell him the harm that I'm clear on, right? I ask him this question: do you need to tell me if there's any other harms that I've done? And then one of the most important things we could do is just shut up and listen. Because the ego wants to jump in here now. It wants to defend itself, right? Because the next question is, do you need to tell me how that harm hurt you, right? And I want to defend my behavior sometimes, right? Yeah, Jimmy, you were hitting on my wife at that party we were at. And right away, I want to defend myself. Yeah, but I was drunk. You know, I want to give an excuse why I was acting the way I was. But what the real thing here is, I need to listen. See, the power of 6 and 7 is showing up in 8 and 9. The power of my behavior and the way I act under the influence and without drinking and drugging in my system really shows up when I'm having a conversation about how I show up in people's lives. And so that's really the power. Like, man, am I willing to change this behavior? Am I willing to stop hurting people? You know, am I willing not to be this guy anymore? You know, how do I do that, right? And then we ask that $64,000 question. You know, what can I do to make this right, right? And if it's a financial amends, I need to make the best arrangement possible. So if I owe you a grand, I'm not coming to you and saying, well, I'll get back to you. No, I'm going to bring some money. And if I don't have the grand, guess what? We'll make it a fine. And I'm telling you, I have had financial amends. I know many men that have financial amends. Everyone and anyone will work with you with when it comes to financial amends. I've seen it a million times. So that's really important. You know, when we go through the literature, you know, it gives us a couple of scenarios. You know, one of the questions or one of the lines I like, it's the man we hated, you know, when we face that guy. Why is hated in a past tense? Maybe I'm a little weird and crazy when I look at words in a big book, but why is hated in a past tense? And I think what Bill assumes is that we've been following direction. That after we got this down on inventory, after we come to that realization that, guess what? The people that I'm mad at, the people I resent, you know, maybe I could see some truth. And the truth is that, you know, just because we're alcoholics, we don't corner the market on sick emotions. The whole planet is sick. You know, just turn on the news for 5 minutes, you know. But can I see that truth? Can I realize something maybe I've never realized, that, you know, that guy or that girl that I'm going to make the approach to, why they did the things they do is because they're defending themselves from a guy like me, and that they're reacting just like I do when I'm spiritually disconnected, right? We all know what a light looks like to react out of fear. We all know what it looks like to act out of anger. We all know what it looks like to be jealous and envious and selfish and self-centered. You know, we're not the only ones that have those character traits. Everyone has those character traits. But the thing is, can I see? Can I see that Joe or Mary, whoever I'm going to visit, is maybe spiritually disconnected on that day, right? And I think this is really important. And if I'm praying for that person, like the fourth step asking me, whether it's the sick man prayer or if I bring the prayer of page 551 into it, where I'm praying for this person for 2 weeks, hopefully by the time I'm ready to make that approach, that direct amends, that the feeling of hate has been removed. Now you might say, Jimmy, I've been molested. I've been molested by my uncle. I've been molested by, you know, whoever. You know, well, I can't let go of that hate. Well, the question is, can you afford not to? Right? Can you afford not to? And again, we're not condoning behavior here. We're looking at our life and how alcohol plays a huge part in my life. And if I don't start looking at things in a different light and seeing that by holding on to this card of victimization, that's the thing that will bring me back to a drink quicker than anything. You know, living in column 3, you know, free room and board for the rest of my life with double digit sobriety, man, that's poison for a guy like me. And I'm sure it's poison for most of you, where I continue to blame people for the way I feel. I mean, I've been doing that since I've been born, you know, and I have to get past that stuff. You know, I'm not a believer in going to somebody and making amends and saying, you know what, I'm a member of AA, and if you don't forgive me, I'm not going to overcome drinking. Now, I know it doesn't say that exactly, but I don't go there saying, you know what, I'm going to drink if you don't say, you know, let me go. Because I'm not going there as a recovering alcoholic. I'm going to make amends as a guy who hurt you, plain and simple. Now, if it comes up, why are you doing this? Or I heard you don't drink anymore, or whatever that conversation turns to, we could talk about that. And I could talk about the importance of not drinking, obviously. But my intent here is to clear up the past and not say, you know what, if you don't forget, that's just being selfish again, right? So that's something very important. Talks about money. He talks about, you know, most alcoholics owe money. Well, that's probably the understatement of the year, right? We all owe money. We all have done things. You know, I'll speak for myself. I've done a lot of things, right? 1979, I stole $27,881.76. You might say, how do you know that number? Well, I got indicted on 2 counts of grand theft when I was sober a year. And I was so afraid to mention it to my sponsor, I just tried to tuck that secret away until I was 5 years sober, when those letters came from the state that said, you owe us money or you're going to jail. And I had to face the piper, you know, and I was terrified because now I have started a family. I got a job. My life is good. You know, my ego is so big now. I don't want you guys to see that I'm a screw up, right? Even though we all know we're all screw ups, right? But yeah, I'm stealing money, okay? And here I am, you know, I go to court and, you know, my sponsor says, get a bunch of AA guys, you know, and they'll write letters for you, all the great work you're doing and blah, blah, blah. So I do that. You know, I'm standing in court and there's a newcomer at the end and he reads his letter. Jimmy makes good coffee on a Tuesday night. I'm like, that's all you got? I mean, you know, so... But what I can't see sometimes is the truth about this stuff. You know, I was willing to go clean that up. And yes, I didn't get arrested, but I was put on probation for 5 years. I had to pay the 27 plus back with interest, big interest, you know, but I got free from it, you know. And I think a lot of us have financial amends that it's just terrifying when you look at numbers sometimes. I mean, I sponsor guys that have IRS problems, tax problems, you name it. I mean, but they take it one step at a time and they get through these things, right? Criminal behavior. Yes, I was a little criminal growing up, living on the streets. You know, I used to rob candy stores, like, you know, and it's kind of weird when I think about that story. I would rob a candy store. And the idea was I'm in eighth grade. I'm robbing candy stores to buy things for you guys so you'd like me. Does that sound familiar? Sounds like I'm in a bar buying drinks for your approval. And, you know, I'm a self-seeking approval junkie, right? I need you to like me. I'm paralyzed by what you think of me, right? And I was listening to a talk by my old sponsor, and he's talking about, you know, robbing lockers in a high school, and it hit me. It would never hit any inventory that I wrote about robbing these candy stores. And I went up to him after that meeting. I said, you know, man, he goes, you know what to do. And so the neighborhood that I grew up in is basically a bomb. It looks like a bomb land. It's a you know, city. It's just in bad shape. And obviously the candy stores are not there. So how do I take that thing, that situation, and put it back into the universe? And what I saw was that my old home group that I got sober in had the church across the street had a food kitchen or a lunch, you know, a lunch program for people who were homeless. And so I went to, you know, a store and I filled up my pickup truck with hundreds of dollars worth of stuff, because that's what I kind of equated it to, how much money I stole in this day and age. And I remember going to this church, and these nuns came out, and they go, "Why are you doing this?" I just said, "I just want to give back to the community." Now, I don't need to tell them I'm a member of AA, I'm a screw up, I'm robbing stores as a little kid. I just wanted to pay back something, put it back into the neighborhood, put back into the universe. Now, again, I don't tell you that egotistically, because all I could tell you is that when I got in my truck to come back home down the shore, I don't think my tires hit the road. And the reason why I say that is because I felt that sense of freedom, you know, that sense of, man, I got something right. I cleaned it up. And, you know, those are some of the things that we look at, you know. I was 10 years sober. I walked out of a marriage into the arms of a woman who understands in AA, and I blew up my life. And I'll never forget this day, July 10th, 1997. I had an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old looking at me. "You going where? You're leaving? How do you make amends to that?" You know, and it really comes down to a living amends. You know, I had to show up as a father. You know, my sponsor was very clear. You might not be someone's husband, but you'll always be somebody's father. And I had to start, you know, just making sure that, you know, that I could show up in these kids' lives. And, you know, they're 32 and 29 now. And, you know, one of the great things that happened to me was I got in a really horrific accident in 1999. And I haven't worked since that day. I've been retired, you know. And what that afforded me was the opportunity to be at my kids' every event, every day of the week and on weekends. You know, I was very fortunate in that I was able to show up and be with these kids. And, you know, and eventually I cleaned up that amends with my ex-wife. First time I tried to make amends to her, she shut the door on me and, you know, told me to go, you know, where. But over time, showing up as a father, showing up, paying my alimony, paying my child support, on and on and on. You know, I was coaching girls basketball. I'll never forget this day. I'm coaching girls basketball, and in the stands is my ex-wife, sitting with my wife, Mary Beth, who most of you know, a lot of you know, and my mother. And the game is going back and forth, very intense. And it's like God grabbed me by the back of the head and said, "Look in the stands." And I looked in the stands and I saw those three sitting together. And all I could think was, I wonder what they're talking about. You know, how does that happen? I've been to football games where the ex-husband and the wife have to sit in different end zones. I mean, that's the amends process. Families can heal. That's my message. A family can heal no matter what, but it's really on me. See, this is the great news we offer here in the amends process. Nobody has to change in my life. Only I have to change. And I'm given these spiritual tools to do that, right? So again, like my old sponsor said, man, if not finishing your meds has anything to do with you drinking again, you know. And later on, it gives us another key line, a line that I really got to take off. Reminding ourselves we will go to any length for a spiritual experience. So the question is, am I really trying to have a new way of life? Am I really going to the ends of the earth to find the people and to pay back the money and to do all the things we're doing? You know, or am I just still that tornado? Because we could be a tornado, stone cold sober, double digit sobriety, roaring through the lives of others, claiming, I'm not drinking. You know, they give that line where the guy comes out of the cellar, you know, the wind ain't blowing here, mom, you know, that kind of stuff. But am I that tornado? This Saturday, we're having a service for my mother who died 7 months ago. Seems like 7 years ago. It's so weird how time just moves so fast. You know, and my mother was my great enabler. And, you know, she took care of the black sheep, me, you know, out of all my brothers and sisters, you know. And I made amends to my mother 28 years ago. And through all those years, we've had a good relationship. You know, as some of you know, she got sick and she got late stage dementia. And, you know, me and my wife were taking care of her. And that's another weird thing, becoming the parent of your parent, right? So we were taking care of her and, you know, it got too hard to do that. So we put her in assisted living, and then, in the assisted living place, she got COVID, in January. She beat COVID, believe it or not. And, you know, I remember once she died at 94 this year. She was 90 years old and was sitting downstairs in my house. I'm clear of my mom, clear as a bell. But she looks at me and looks at Mary Beth, and she looks at me again and says, I couldn't find you. I couldn't find you. I'm like, what? Yeah, I walked the streets looking for my son for 2 years. Prior to coming to the Alcoholics Anonymous, I was homeless on the street for 19 months. And what I didn't know, even from that first amends, is that my mother walked the streets looking for her son. She would go to the bars that she thought I was hanging in. She would go to the corners that she thought I was hanging out on. She'd be 5'4" on her tippy toes, trying to look in through the window to see if her son was there. I didn't realize that. I didn't know that. I didn't understand that. Not only did I steal from her financially, I stole her emotional sobriety, where for 2 years she had to look for her son, who was living on the streets. And it was as though God said, don't say a thing. Just pay attention. You know, and right after that, our conversation went right back to normal. But it really just showed me that it doesn't make a difference how long we're sober and how long those amends are. We scar people in their heart, right? And, you know, they might forgive, but they don't forget, right? And I got to remember that. You know, when she died, on the day she died, I had my knee replaced a couple of weeks earlier, and I was coming out of physical therapy, and she said, and they called me, and they said she's transitioning to die. Now, I've heard it from a million podiums of you guys dealing with the death of a loved one. And I didn't know if I could ever be that guy who could do what you guys have done. And I'll never forget sitting with my mother. You know, I had to take a COVID test. I had to take that, put the PPE on, all that stuff. And she couldn't see. She couldn't speak. She looked like a skeleton. I didn't see her for almost 2 months or over 2 months. But the hospice nurse said, when you walk in and say something, she's going to hear you. I'm like, how's that going to happen? And the minute I said, hi, Mom, I could see her chest going like this. And then I had that moment, the moment that you guys had, the moment that you guys have taught me what to do. You know, I was able to sit with my mom and tell her how much we love her and how much I thank her for the things that she did for me. And I had that moment. It's probably the most gratifying moment I've had in my sobriety in 34 years, is to have that moment with a woman who took care of me forever, and to be able to let go and let God with that, right? And when I left that room, she died an hour later. You know, and I'm not saying, like, good for you, Jimmy. You know, I'm just so grateful that I was the one that God called to be with her in her last hours, not my brothers and sisters, though that would have been nice too, but it was me. And it was a full circle of what this amends process really does, when I wanted no part of this woman at one time. And now I'm sitting with her and talking about, go on to see Dad, go on to see, be with God. You know, it was quite a powerful moment for me. You know, spiritual life's not a theory. We have to live it. That's what our literature says, right? And a lot of us get stuck in the hallway of life. And that's what I was talking about. You know, the visualization of what this really looks like, right? To step into the sunlight of the spirit, right? I always talk about this all the time. I'm downstairs in my house, you know, sitting at the kitchen table with a new prospect. You know, I always point to that door. I said, the only thing you need to do is go through that door to be free. But in order to go through that door, you have to walk through the hallway of life. And that's where a lot of our darkness is. And this is where we have to uncover, discover, and discard the things that are blocking us from God and from each other. And we have to do something that most of us think is weakness, but it's really strength in disguise, and that's to be vulnerable, to let another man in, to let another woman in, to talk about our secrets, to talk about the things that have been blocking us. You know, that reading I read all the time, because I think it's one of the most powerful readings out of Daily Reflections on May 1st. It's a side of myself that I refuse to look at that rules me. I must be willing to look at the dark side in order to heal my mind and my heart, because that's the road to freedom. I must walk into darkness to find a light, and walk into fear to find a peace. Old timers used to say it like this: Alcoholics Anonymous is like a big bonfire. A lot of us are just walking around the fire, staying warm, but eventually the fire will go out. If you really want to change, if you really want to be free, if you really want to have an experience with the 12 steps and with God and have a relationship with others, you have to walk through the fire and get your ass burnt and feel the uncomfortability of change. You know, and when we do that, when we do that, we get to experience those promises at the end of the ninth step. You know, and one of the promises is really the key to the door of what we do, that we will come to realize that God is doing for us what we can never do for ourselves. And when we start to see that truth, and when we start to take these actions, even though we might think they don't work, guess what? We get free. And then we have an experience. And we share that experience with a newcomer, with an old timer, whoever we're sitting across the table from, whether it's a man, whether it's a woman, whether whatever. The idea is we're free. Now we have three more steps in the book to really continue this spiritual experience and to continue to grow. And that's for the speakers that are coming up. But this life has been unbelievable. But it really starts with being honest with myself. I'm an alcoholic. I need help. I need to go through these steps. I need to go through the hallway of life and uncover, discover, and discard the things that are blocking me from God and from you. And this amends process is one of the big chunks of truth, because I come and I see you and I make the approach and I do my best. And that's all God is asking us to do. They're asking us to do is to do our best. So that is it. My time, I think, is done. If you want to hear that story I told when the breakout rooms happen, I'll tell you next time. All right. Thank you.